Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode 61. I'm Morgan Hayes, an assistant professor in biosystems and ag engineering here at the University of Kentucky, focusing on livestock facilities. And in my personal life, I farm in Boyle County, Kentucky with my husband. It's a commercial cattle and hay operation.
And I'm Josh Jackson, a professor in biosystems and agriculture engineering as well, where I focus on precision livestock farming. And I'm a home life, raise registered Angus cattle, some goats, and focus on some hay production.
So our topic today is going to be the new veterinary feed directive, the VFD, that came into effect in June. We're about a month out from when it came in, five-ish weeks. And I just, you know, I was in our local feed store, and it's very apparent that it's now in effect. I've been in there a couple times, but it's just sort of an interesting thing, just talking about how that's affecting our operation. But before we get to that, we want to do a little bit of a follow-up on what's been happening on the farm. Normally we say in the last week, but we were actually at a conference last week. I have had very resounding residual illnesses going through my household for the last month. And so we've probably had a pretty good delay since our last recording. So why don't you give us an update on the last few?
So let's see, we've still been working on equipment. So we're just about getting ready our one big tractor with the loader back. So it's getting ready to come back. But we have been pretty much in kind of a stall pattern. We want to cut a little bit more hay. Still kind of being the first, one is the first cutting, but we're letting it grow a little more because it's just been not a lot this year. So we're definitely going to, and we soil sample that farm. So we're going to put down some lime and probably some other fertilizers as well to try to kick it up a little bit. So we're a little bit short on hay. So definitely considering selling some heifers at this point right now. And what else has been happening? We did have, you know, some just general shows that we've gone to, some of the sheep shows and goat shows. And also,
I think you had a brother pick up some more goats, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a brother. He picked up some more goats out of Texas. Picked up some more goats out of Texas and brought them back home. So we got them. We haven't been fully integrated in the herd. They're still isolated. Okay. Kind of isolated on another farm. Just keep an eye on them. So just general summertime, getting ready for calving, the upcoming fall calving season. So just
and
a little
for you,
stuff.
That's the bigger season.
That's the bigger season. So we have right now, we have almost 60 mamas coming in the fall. So I have to, with hay challenges, we might have to sell some or do something with them.
If someone's not a very good mother, they're on the chopping block this year is what's happening.
Yes.
Which is, I think that's a reality for a lot of farmers right now. Hay is going to be a little short. Hay is going to be expensive this year.
Yep.
The cash crops, the corn and beans have been pretty solid around here, certainly between the general market prices and then some of the distilleries and growth and pretty good contracts that people have on there right now. So
yep.
I kind of agree with you. There's hay ground is tighter than it sometimes is in this area of the country and area of the state. And on top of that, supply has been coming out of the fields has not been great. We're getting ready like you for a second cutting on best hay field.
Yep.
We could have done it this week. Of course, it's rained like every other day. It looks like next week is hot and dry. So getting equipment ready to go for that, traveled out for that conference last week. That takes a lot of work. We probably should have a whole conversation about how you travel when you farm. It's a tremendous burden on other people.
Yes.
And we pay them, some of them are family and they do it very graciously, but it's also stressful on you to be gone. Now you have two brothers and your mother, so probably not everyone leaves at once. But if my husband and I leave at once, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And so we actually, you know, we lost a cow last week in a pond. I've never, you know, all my life, never had this happen, but I guess we were gone. I was gone. The group I check, you know, a cow must've gotten the pond and then didn't get out. So she didn't make it out. So, you know, checking cows while people are away can be a challenge, even for, you know, when you have somebody
even with
there.
Experienced.
Yeah.
family members doing it. Yeah, and probably, you know, they went and did a check, but they didn't.
They didn't do a check. They saw like, oh yeah, they're, you know,
so animals are there, grass is good, and they didn't do a good count on it. Yep. That's a shame. And it is difficult. That's one thing that my husband's pretty adamant. We get a good check on cows at least every other day, preferably every day, with the acknowledgement that calves are much harder to check at this point, because our spring calves are now big enough that they can run, hide, yep, and get in the trees that they're not supposed to be in. But the single wire hot keeps the cows out of the trees, but it does not keep the calves out of the tree. So all of that comes into account. So I am with you. That is a challenge. So we're getting ready for hay. We're definitely rotating cattle. Even though we did okay on our first cutting, it certainly wasn't our best year. It wasn't our worst year by any stretch. We fertilized a lot of our pastures and hay fields, which helped.
Yep.
But the other side of that is our pastures didn't all get fertilized. And so some of them we are running tight. So some of our farms were understocked and we're just kind of cranking through all of our pastures and but other ones we're going to have to short cycle this time and possibly feed a little bit of hay in August before we get through that summer slump back into that growth that we get in the fall when it gets a little bit cooler. So we kind of know that that's coming, but we're trying to get some hay cut before we have to start short cycling. But, you know, at the end of the day, we'd rather short cycle, eat a little bit of hay now. It means that long term, that's better for the pasture health standpoint of the grasses. So.
Yeah.
Just trying to figure out what needs to happen when all of our cattle got worked before we left. I think that was a big deal. That was one thing that was still on our agenda.
So we'll find a cool enough morning or evening.
A cool enough day. Yeah, it was actually the week of the 4th of July. Right after the 4th, we got a couple days that were like in highs in the 80s, which is not cool, but a lot better than the 95-ish that cooler. It was over the weekend prior to the 4th. So that... getting that group worked was a big deal. That was that one last group that still didn't have fly tags in. They were on a fly controlling mineral. And this is part of our VFD talk. It is actually a VFD to have that mineral. But knowing that that farm has poor working facilities and that we were behind on getting them worked, talked to our vet, we did get a VFD to put them on a fly control mineral just to sort of make sure that we didn't have any really systemic issues. Get them worked.
Okay.
That did happen, which positive. And that sort of, I'm just cycling us back to our topic of the day, which is the veterinary feed directive. And what happened, for anyone who's unfamiliar with the veterinary feed directives, essentially what they do is they control how antibiotics are given to animals. And it's designed as a way to reduce the likelihood of having resistant bacteria out there. And the debate about how much the animal industry is influencing this is still up for discussion. I think there's some antibiotics that I think we see some resistance that might come from animals, and there's some other ones that look like they're much stronger correlations to human behaviors causing some of that resistance. But either way, the goal is to try and make sure that when we're feeding antibiotic to an animal, that we're doing it in a responsible way.
Yep.
It is a pretty cumbersome, at least from my understanding, for veterinarians, large animal veterinarians, to manage these things. Traditionally, we've had to do it if we put something into a feed, a mineral, or a water source. We've had to have a VFD. So any low-level antibiotic that's going into anything that you're using in a lot of times for people that are starting out a new group of animals, that introductory diet a lot of times will have an antibiotic in it just to make sure that the stress with transport and social stresses with new groups animals. Of animals and intermixing animals from different operations, that type of stress and introduction of a lot of different bacteria at one time can drive up a lot of disease right at the point of mixing for animals on a feedlot. That's very common that we would see on beef cattle going to a feedlot, that first diet would have an antibiotic in it. Similarly, yep. If I bring backgrounding animals onto my farm, I might want to have an antibiotic that I give them introductorily while they come onto the farm just to make sure everything gets over that first 2-3 week
hump. Adaption period.
Yep. And that's not unusual, but generally I would say that the beef cow calf industry, which we're both in, doesn't tend to feed a lot of low level antibiotics in general. That's not typically one of our objectives.
Nope.
One, because they're on pasture, which gives them a lot of space, not a lot of disease transmission.
Yep.
And two, it's an expense. And so most people don't choose to feed antibiotics.
Have to have a good ROI, and that's not going to primarily benefit you on a cow-calf. But ours is primarily a closed herd for the most part.
Right. So we only see it a little bit sometimes if we bring animals into our barn, to fill a barn, if we don't have enough calves. But we've now gotten to an animal number that we don't tend to bring in animals because the cost of the antibiotics, both from a treatment and just a general low-level introductory on a diet, neither of those cost in well. What we found is that we can raise, you know, the 40 to 50 calves that we have in a group in our barn and not have to feed antibiotics, not have to treat 10%, 15%. We don't have any mortalities typically.
Okay.
Much lower morbidity levels because we're not bringing in any disease versus if we push our number on that barn, which can comfortably hold 60 or 65 feeder calves. If we bring in that 10 or 15 extra, the cost on bringing them in is, it just doesn't make sense for the extra stress and strain on our it's not worth it. So that's traditionally where the VFD has been since, I guess, maybe 2018-ish.
2018, yeah. So it's been several years they had it for primarily the feeders and whatnot.
Yep. And so it's been in those dietary levels that we've been trying to control what's being added, how much, how often, all of that. And there have always been some pushback on them, but most people have gotten sort of used to it. What happened in June of this year is that any antibiotic that you would give to an animal at any point
for treatment
is now also a VFD. So the feed store can no longer sell you a tetracycline type product, which is a very common one that we use, like pink eye.
Yeah.
Sometimes we use it for foot rot. Yep. Then there's the higher level drugs that we also tend to use both for our cow-calf, but also for our feeders. And those could be things like
Draxin or your...
Yep. Yep, Draxin would be...
Genomycin, your higher dollar, you know.
Yeah, genomycin, we're not supposed to use at all, I think, technically now. And yeah. I'm not sure we have been allowed to. I think horses have been allowed to use it, and I'm not sure that they are even... I know we're not supposed to use it because it's a very long withdrawal period, so generally calves under like 90 days. But I actually am not entirely sure the rules, so I don't want to give anyone recommendations on that drug use.
Ask your veterinarian and read the label.
That's absolutely true. Well, now you have to ask your veterinarian anyway, because all of these drugs come from the veterinarian at this point. You don't get them without the veterinarians writing a script for them or buying it from them directly. For us, I don't know what a script costs in other parts of the country. I'd actually be interested to get comments from people, but for us, the script is somewhere between $35 and $50 here in part of the state.
Yeah.
Even with a good relationship, that's even just the cost to do business because it takes them time to write a script.
Yep.
They can write a script if they have a good working relationship without coming out to the farm, but they are going to have a good enough relationship with you. They might still have to FaceTime, get a picture or two from you to see what's happening, to verify that that script is appropriate.
Right.
And so it's a little bit of a tricky balance. For us, we can typically tell when pink eye is coming and treat it ourselves.
Yes.
That's not typically a disease that we would have the vet come out for. The vet, quite honestly, doesn't have time to come out to treat pink eye on a cow. So that's something that we will do ourselves. But now we have to be a little more proactive and make sure that we have things like LA on hand, if we're going to use a Draxin type product for a calf to try and really knock back a pink eye exposure. If we have a lot of pink eye, we might have to go to a more aggressive antibiotic to try and knock it back in the herd. If it's a one animal exclusively, we might be able, and we might choose to treat it with a lower level, like a tetracycline product and then a patch on the eye. But all of that now has to be anticipated ahead of time. We either have to have those drugs on hand ahead of time, or we have to be able to go to the vet and get them immediately.
Yes, there's no going running down Tractor Supply, Southern States, wherever, you know, the farm store.
The farm store to pick these up. And so it's really, I think, maybe forces us to be a little bit more proactive in our planning. This was probably not our year. As you said, we got our last flight deck and after the VFD came into effect. But for us, that was one reason to call our vet and get the VFD for the mineral ahead of time, because I can feed that over many weeks and the vet is comfortable with us doing that on that farm.
Okay.
Knowing that we've had some systemic issues on that farm in the past, he understands the issues on that farm. He's visited that farm. He's comfortable with us feeding it to that specific group of animals. And then simultaneously, we do have some of these medicines on hand right now, but we will actively, if we see that our stock is going low, we will have to be proactive about getting them from him for some of these. It's going to be a very interesting balance because he's going to have to write the VFD for a disease.
Yes.
So he has to know that that disease is on the farm to write the script. But he doesn't necessarily want to see us every time we have a cow with pink eye. So we're finding that balance right now. And I don't know how that's working on your farm.
So, you know, we do have, a vet on, quote unquote, on staff.
Yes.
Because we have one of the family members, he's married to a vet. So my brother is. So, at least she's there and she can see, she sees and knows the problem. So anytime we have one case of pink eye, we know that it can snowball in essence.
Right.
So even though you're treating, you know, the fly with flies and other challenges, but can spread fairly quickly. 1-2-10 kind of thing. Right. And so that be for us, you know, being really, really active and like you said, planning ahead on making sure we have enough cyclines for, you know, Oxytet for them. And then, you know, if it's going to be a severe case where we have somebody, lone animal on a farm, you know, we might hit them with Draxin the first time. If it's that first animal, we might hit them with Draxin, hoping that if we can resolve their case, maybe none of the other animals will get it.
Yeah, I sort of am with you. I will also, if I see a calf with a pretty, like, it looks like they're getting pink eye, I'm more inclined to give them a more aggressive treatment because the value of that calf, if I can keep it healthy, is huge. The doc on a little bit of a spot in the eye on a calf can, right now, pretty devastating with the costs where they're at on those animals, with the value of them. So, and the cost to treat on an animal that's 200 pounds is very different than to treat an animal that is
1,500 pounds.
1,500. So I'm sort of with you. It's a little bit of a judgment call based upon the type of reaction you're seeing in the animal, the number of animals that are showing the disease. All of that will make a decision about what you treat with. And now the conversation also comes in with the vet about what they think you should, which in some ways I think is maybe healthy, because sometimes they've seen more on more farms and they kind of know how the season is progressing in a local area.
Yes. Going to be curious to see what happens with the calving season as well, because a lot of we maybe give them rest floor to some animals. It's going to be orbanamine as well.
Yes.
As well, just to, you know, reduce some inflammation. So there's, you know, little things. How are we going to change? You know, how are we going to modify how we do things? And if we have a respiratory issue, you know, we'll definitely be going to the vet and seeing, can we, you know, do we think it's going to be a systemic issue or just an isolated animal?
And sometimes with young calves, especially a couple day old, we see a lot of digestive things, a lot of scouring.
Yes.
We use sulfa for that sometimes. Sometimes we'll use Baytrol.
Yep.
There's a couple different products that we typically use for scouring. And for scouring, having that on hand before you have scouring would be much better because, honestly, if you found scouring when you came home from work on an evening, and the vet's on call all the time, but you're not going to get a VFD and get a new drug until the next day. That's another 12 hours that they're off of food and water potentially. And for an animal at two or three, it's probably going to be about 5 days old on the first set of scours that's driven by a bacteria. At least I think most younger than that, there's some other issues. But we hit that 5 day mark and we're seeing E. coli or salmonella at five when it comes to 10 or 12. I'm not a vet. But once we hit that sort of sweet spot, they're still a pretty light animal and they don't have a lot of capacity to hold. So if they go off of milk as they're scouring, have a full 12-hour block before you can give them a treat, you're really almost pushing the envelope on their potential to recover well, which is a challenge. So the first animal that shows scours in the year is probably going to have a really tough recovery if you don't have some sort of stockpile of medicine backstocked, is probably not stockpiled. That's probably not exactly the intention with it, but it's almost the nature of how it has to work.
Yes.
On an operation. I guess vets can anticipate that that is a common thing that happens and could give you, if you they knew you calved out 100 animals, likelihood that you're going to have at least scour this high. So it will allow you prior to the calving season. But that's a really interesting dynamic. And it is sort of like you said, it's something that you have to be anticipating. The vet has to be on board with you.
Yes.
And that working relationship, which was been pretty important in general up until now, is where it actually, I think for a lot of cow-calf producers, very real. For people that have been feeding feeders, for people that are out on lots, the original VFD already forced that relationship. For the cow-calf producers, the tetracyclines and some of these other products are really going to force that relationship with the vet.
Your new floors.
These are things that they might have not necessarily used a vet in the past, and now they're going to have to work with a vet, which is really, I think, interesting. Now, the one thing I will say is that the wormers are still out there on the market. You can still go buy yourself some wormer. And I think you can still get any of your vaccines. So you could still do a scour guard.
Yes.
Do all of these products to try and do preventative things without engaging with the vet, which I think is an interesting dynamic. So you can try and worm your animals and do preventative work on your own. But then as soon as something goes wrong, then the vet has to be involved. So there's a pretty interesting dynamic.
And you still have some of your antimicrobials. So you still have your antimicrobials. It's a completely different class. So you're on a force. So you can still feed Monensin without having to have.
That's correct.
Veterinary feed directive. So that, I mean, Monensin still, you know, it depends on sometimes the wording can be important as well, but Monensin can still be utilized. You know, if we're thinking about coccidia or even just trying to get some additional gains on some of our calves.
Yep.
Or just having that in your, just to make sure we don't have any other problems.
Yeah. So I guess my philosophy is I still talk to my vet. I still communicate with my vet. They still sort of understand what our vaccination program looks like. But now I just have to be a little bit more proactive to make sure that I have what I need on hand for things that I plan to treat myself without having the vet out there. And it's not because I don't like the vet or I don't want to have him out there, but just from a practical standpoint, only has so many hours in the day, and we are already understaffed on vets, large animal vets in basically all of the U.S. If we're being 100% honest, there's just a lack of large animal vets in a lot of regions. So from a practical standpoint, there are certain things we have to do ourselves, and we just have to have a good enough relationship, and then we have to be proactive enough to make sure that we have the right things on hand, or that the vet has them in stock before that season comes in. So when we come into fall calving, hopefully he has these things that I can purchase from him, and not at such a high markup that I feel like I'm being gouged buying it. I've never felt that way. I have a good vet that I have a good relationship with. But certainly that's something
that is a concern.
That is a concern that buying from the vet's office is more expensive than purchasing mine, which is, you know, not what I want to do. I would rather purchase from a local store at 50% more than it is online. Then that's a hard sell.
Hard sell. Yeah. And like, you know, sometimes we've bought some of our drugs. Well, like fly tags, we bought from the store, but that's different. But a lot of times we had gotten some of the drugs offline just because it had been cheap.
And sometimes it's easier to get. So we talked about, you know, when we were doing our vaccines, that one of our vaccines we typically use is actually, it had some issues with manufacturing and it was hard to find on the shelf. It was hard to find actually online too, to be 100% honest, because I looked at purchasing it both ways when I was getting desperate to find it. But all of that to say, like, I don't mind spending a little bit more money to get it in person, but I can get all of my meds from one source online, and sometimes I can't do that.
Yes.
So there's that balance too. And certainly if the vet's office doesn't have April, Bantamine, things like that during calving season, I will be frustrated. I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope that they are able to handle that, or that the local feed store will have it and they will have a good enough relationship that the VFDs will go through smoothly. But that's really difficult because the feed store then has to have someone to handle the VFDs, and there's a lot of regulatory on the feeders also.
Okay.
So they only have certain people that typically have VFDs. So certainly for places like Tractor Supply and those larger stores, figuring out how they're handling them could be very tricky.
Very tricky.
I'm lucky I have a fairly good local I that does handle the VFD, and they tend to be pretty good about it. But not everyone's going to have a great relationship with every vet. It's going to be a weird dynamic. And so either the vet's office or someone's going to have to carry those medicines. And for a lot of the feed stores, it's not worth carrying if they have to handle the VFDs. They don't get paid. Like, the vet gets paid to write one, but the feed store doesn't get paid to handle it necessarily. I mean, I'm sure they have to mark up the prices on the medicines that they're handling that way, but it's a little bit trickier, I would imagine, for them. They don't have that upfront cost of writing.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, this first year, kind of what takes place and how everybody transitions to the system. Like you said, we've even used a couple different vets depending on who was available at the time. So right. Sometimes we have our primary vet, but if somebody was like, they're busy, they're out on call, then call around to Anderson County, like, this guy's available.
Have them come. Yep.
So if it's an emergency, you know, a lot of times it can be emergency. We're just calling whoever answers the phone, whoever's available.
Yep.
So that might be it. That'll
It'll be a little bit different dynamic too, I would imagine.
I may pose a challenge, but I think hopefully we'll be able to be resilient. But yeah, you know, so this is use of this antibiotics.
Gotta be judicious. That's a tough word.
Judicious.
Yeah. So, okay. Before we end, though, let's just do a quick update on our goals for next week, because maybe I won't get no sick children, and I will be back next week to do another podcast.
So our goal is we have a couple things going on this Friday, but we're going to try to go ahead and cut a second round and start going through and cutting a couple different fields this Friday. Okay, and so hopefully being cutting hay and raking, rolling, bailing by Sunday or Monday.
We have the same goal. We are also having the goal to cut on Friday and Saturday.
Okay.
What needs to get cut? Also, we are fencing. We have a fencing contractor coming in to put up one set of fence. We also have that's already marked out, so that hopefully we will make it out this week and we will get that fence up. At the same time, we have another fence line with another neighbor that's getting replaced. And we are going to put up the fence, but we have someone coming in near the fence line.
Oh, okay.
So that one is a more urgent one because there's a lot of animals at fence line. And we only have so long that we can keep them off of that fence line. Right. So
only so many rotations.
We only have so many rotations before they will be back up against that fence. So that's a little bit trickier for us, that management of that on that farm. So that is urgent. So how we're going to balance that with hay, we're not sure, but both things must happen.
Yes. So both.
So when we come back next week, ask me how both things are going and my head might explode. But that is our goal for the next week.
All right. So it sounds like we're both being ambitious. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. And we will see you guys next week with another podcast.
Take care, everybody.
Have You Heard is a production of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, along with the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. Discover what's wildly possible at ca.uky.edu.